Journalist Barrett Brown was sentenced to over 5 years in prison for his role in reporting on Anonymous and the Stratford hack, for which Jeremy Hammond is now serving time in prison. Here's a statement he released after the sentencing.
Good news. The U.S. government decided today that because I did such a good job investigating the cyber industrial complex, they're now going to send me to investigate the prison industrial complex. For the next 35 months, I'll be provided with free food, clothes, and housing as I seek to expose wrongdoing by Bureau of Prisons officials and staff, and otherwise report on news and culture in the world's greatest prison system. I want to thank the Department of Justice for having put so much time and energy into advocating on my behalf. Rather than holding a grudge against me for the 2 years of work I put into bringing attention to a DOJ-linked campaign to harass and discredit journalists like Glenn Greenwald, the agency instead labored tirelessly to ensure that I received this very prestigious assignment. Wish me luck.
We learned recently of the death of Phil Africa in prison on January 10th. Phil Africa was one of the Move 9, one of the members of a Philadelphia-based black revolutionary group serving decades in prisons on trumped-up murder charges. The insanely brutal repression of Move in the 1970s and 80s forms one of the most despicable recent chapters in the state's war on revolutionaries who challenged the foundations of racism and exploitation of the earth. Phil's death occurred under extremely suspicious circumstances, with his previously good health declining dramatically while being held in a hospital for days, prevented from communicating with his family. From one angle, his life was almost inconceivably tragic. Two of his children were killed by the state, one crushed to death by police as an infant in 1976, and another dying when the police dropped a bomb on the Move family's home in West Philadelphia in 1985. Phil remained separated from his wife Janine, another Move 9 prisoner, for 36 of their 44 years of marriage and was not able to see her before he died. Yet, despite the horrific violence he and his family endured at the hands of the state, he was no victim. He maintained strong relationships with friends, family, political supporters, and fellow inmates, corresponding with hundreds of people, serving as a mentor to many, learning to paint and expressing himself as an artist, and remaining a committed revolutionary to the end. As a press release announcing his death stated, "Phil will never be forgotten, and this is not the end. He is dearly missed, but his strong example should inspire everyone to fight harder for the freedom of the Move 9 and all political prisoners. This latest government treachery will be the fuel needed to motivate people to step up the pace for this revolution."
To learn more about Phil Africa, the ex-worker caught up with Ramona Africa, part of the Move family and an active supporter of the incarcerated Move 9. Ramona discusses the origin and history of Move, the life of Phil Africa, and the ongoing struggle to free the remaining members of the Move family from prison. You can learn more at onamove.com.
This is Alanis from The Ex-Worker, and we're speaking today with Ramona Africa. Ramona, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us.
Oh, thank you for having me. We always welcome the opportunity to inform people about Move and what's going on with us.
First, we want to offer our condolences on the death of Phil Africa, who passed away on January 10th.
We appreciate that. Thank you.
We'd like to learn more about Phil's life and his struggle. First, for a bit of background in case all our listeners aren't familiar, can you give us a quick introduction to the Move organization?
The Move organization surfaced in like 1971, founded by a black man called John Africa. And John Africa brought people together from all different races, beliefs, socioeconomic backgrounds, just from all over, and brought us together as a family and cemented the bond of family with one common belief, that belief being in the all importance of life, of every living thing without categories. What John Africa taught Move and enabled us to understand is that those running the system teach people and program people to believe in things like money, jewelry, a house, a car, a certain lifestyle. But none of those things are important. Only life is important. And this is Mu's belief. Our very first demonstrations were at the zoo, the Philadelphia Zoo, at farriers that sold, you know, mink coats, et cetera, at circuses that enslave and abuse animals for so-called entertainment. And we demonstrated at these places because John Africa taught us to understand that the definition of life is feelings. And it is absolutely ridiculous to feel that humans have feelings, but no other form of life does. I mean, if you kick a person, they'll yelp. They'll feel that. But if you kick a dog, the dog feels that too and will yelp, you know? So we had, as I said, demonstrations and protests of the abuse of animal life. We had demonstrations at boarding homes for the elderly that were nothing more than fire traps, and where the elderly would be abused physically and emotionally. We had demonstrations at conferences and conventions of DuPont Chemical, Dow Chemicals, for poisoning our environment. We had demonstrations at the reservoir where our drinking water comes from, protesting the poison, the chemicals put in our drinking water. So we take life seriously. That is our belief. It is because we believe in life, in the sanctity of life, in revering and respecting life and opposing anything or anybody that goes against life. Those running this system have come down on us horrifically because they don't believe in life, even though it's life that's keeping them alive, you know? They don't care about the air that they need to breathe, the water they need to drink. You know, they don't care about the sun that they need as well as we need to warm the earth and put light on the earth so that we can survive here. They don't care about any of that. And that is what has put us in conflict with each other, put Mu in conflict with the system, and put those running the system in conflict with Mu.
Can you tell us about how Phil became a revolutionary and joined the Mu family?
Yeah, Phil and Delbert Africa were very close friends before coming into Mu, years before coming into Mu. And they had a rather roguish past. I mean, they did things that would raise the hair on your neck, you know, and we don't have a problem acknowledging that because that's what they were and who they were before Mu. But upon meeting John Africa, you know, just casually, and then John Africa, like, talking to them, befriending them, they saw a different way of life. And they still had a lot of those characteristics in them when first coming to Mu. But the longer they stayed in Mu and applied the teaching of John Africa, they just became such loving and, at the same time, serious revolutionaries. You know, what became important to Phil is his family, you know, his wife, his children, the Mu family, you know, doing what's right. He became uncompromisingly opposed to the things that you hear about all too often today, the police murders, mass incarceration, you know, this country bombing and murdering children like they did our children. May 13th of 1985, this government dropped a bomb on me and my family and killed the second of Phil's children. They killed one back in 1976. The police trampled a three-week-old baby, Phil and Janine's three-week-old baby, to death. So along with the wisdom, undisputable wisdom of MOVE founder John Africa, and along with the examples that this system demonstrates, not only with MOVE, but around the world, literally, Phil became a committed revolutionary. John Africa said he was a preacher, you know, and it's the truth, because people across the globe that had any contact with Phil loved Phil. Inmates in the prison, particularly younger men that were coming through there and did not have a strong attitude, a right attitude, and would get involved in things that they shouldn't and everything, Phil would talk to them and work with them. Phil was a boxing trainer. And on the street, MOVE people and even a lot of our supporters would run into people that say, yeah, Phil taught me how to box. You know, Phil straightened me out. This one woman who lives in Boston, her nephew was in SCI Dallas with Phil. And the young man and his aunt had a little conflict. And Phil wrote his aunt. And when I spoke with his aunt, you know, recently after Phil passed, she said, I couldn't believe that this young man, well, Phil wasn't all that young. He was 60, I think. And she said, I can't believe that he wrote me. And boy, did he straighten me out in a very calm, nice way, you know, expressed his concern and everything. And everybody that has had contact with Phil Africa has the same kind of reaction to him. John Africa said he was a preacher, you know, because he could sit and talk to you and counsel you, you know, with MOVE belief, and never had a problem doing it. Never had a problem doing that. So that's what Phil Africa was before MOVE, and what the teaching of John Africa turned him into.
What can our listeners do to celebrate the legacy of Phil Africa?
Yeah, this coming Saturday, January 31st, we're having a celebration of life event for Phil, and we're going to have some of his artwork there because Phil was an artist. He didn't start out good, but became a very good artist. People from across the world are emailing us, you know, their comments, their remembrances of Phil, their contact with Phil. And people will be there at the program who will speak and, you know, speak on their contact with Phil. And that's really what the event is going to be. We'll have food and refreshments for people. But people will just be speaking on their remembrances of Phil. And with this example, MOVE and a lot of our supporters are more determined than ever to up the ante on pressuring this system about about releasing our family, particularly with the examples of Mike Brown in Ferguson, Eric Garner in New York, the young brother in Ohio. These people, these cops that committed these murders, were never even charged. Our family, nine members of our family, have sat in jail for over 36 years, going on 37 years, for a crime that they did not commit, and understand this, a crime that the trial judge, this was a, the trial of the Move 9 was a trial by the judge, not jury. It was what they call a bench trial. So the whole burden of the trial fell on the judge. He had to listen to all the evidence and then render a verdict. He found all nine of our sisters and brothers guilty of murder, sentenced them to 30 to 100 years each in prison. The very next day, he went on a radio talk show program, and when asked the direct question by Mumia Abu-Jamal as to who killed Officer James Ramp on August 8th of 1978, Judge Malmit responded saying, "I haven't the faintest idea." Now, he had just sat through that entire trial. He found my family guilty. Now, whether you're a juror or a judge, in order to find somebody guilty based on their legal law, you have to be convinced beyond a reasonable doubt. Now, saying that you don't have the faintest idea who committed crime, that is not, you know, being convinced beyond a reasonable doubt. Our family has sat in prison almost 37 years now, and they were eligible for parole as of 2008. And each time they have gone before the parole board, they have been denied because they won't lie and say that they're guilty of something that they're not. That's what the parole board says, failure to take responsibility for your crime. Now, they have not committed a crime. And the thing is, for the parole board to demand that they say and admit to committing a crime that they didn't, what sense does that make? Do you know almost every week or thereabouts you hear or read in the news about people that have sat in prison, been convicted to prison for, they've been in there 10, 20, 30, even 40 years, some of them, only for new evidence to come up or, you know, something happens to show that there's no way this person could have committed that crime. And they have to release them. So with a track record like that of convicting innocent people and having them sit in jail, some of them 40 years or more, where do you get off demanding that somebody say that they're guilty when they've been telling you for almost 37 years now that they're innocent? And the trial judge said he don't know who committed the crime. I mean, this is appalling, you know? And people wonder why MOVE people keep coming at this system the way we do. I mean, you put my family in prison, call them murderers with no evidence, with the trial judge saying he can't prove that they're guilty. He don't know who committed the crime. But meanwhile, when these cops shoot people down in the street, I mean, they just keep doing their job. They don't get indicted and convicted. The same people that want to call my family, the Move 9 murderers, are the very same government that dropped the bomb on our family and burnt babies of some of the Move 9 alive. But they call us murderers? You know, I mean, it's hard to take. It's hard to take. And it's what keeps Move people bitter and resentful and keeps us fighting this kind of nonsense. Yeah.
And what can our listeners do to continue the struggle to free the members of the Move 9 who are still in prison?
Well, the main thing is the parole board, because at this point, they have completed and gone over their minimum sentences. And most of the prisons that my family are in have recommended my family for parole. So, you know, either parole board members are getting orders or they're just nasty and hate Move. Something is happening there. But they are the people, the Pennsylvania Parole Board, they're the people that need to hear from us, that need to be pressured by the people and know that people are watching this situation, are aware of it, and want Move people out of those prisons.
Ramona, thank you so much for taking the time to speak to us today.
Oh, no problem. Thank you for the time. Let me just say, anybody that wants more information can call Move at 215-386-1165 or email us at onamova@gmail.com.